Tony Khan called tonight the start of a new era for AEW. This was the beginning of the Max era. He's been trying to get AEW on Max streaming for the longest time. Tonight was the first night. I watched it on TBS. I do know some people who watched the show on Max and were complaining about all the commercials. I don't know what they were expecting any different. It's like Raw on Netflix. You're going to get commercials, even if you pay for the non-ad version of the streaming service. But it is an opportunity for them to try to pick up some new fans at a time when they have lost a lot of viewers. As we now turn the page to 2025, it is a brand new year and a brand new page. And Tony Khan is going to try to bring new fans into the product. He is going to try to claw back some of the fans who stop watching the product. I don't think that tonight's show is going to make a difference in terms of those people. This was certainly not a show that would convince you, if you haven't been watching the show, that you should begin to tune in. Although overall, I did think it was a solid follow-up to World's End. But it is the Max era. And for those of you who are interested, the archives, the earliest AEW shows from 2019, are all now available on Max. So I have the list here of what you can find. If you have a Max subscription, they have the earliest events, Double or Nothing 2019, which is still one of the best shows they ever did. That's the show that had the Cody Rhodes, Dustin Rhodes match. I was in the third row for that. It's a really special experience being in the building for that one. So that first Double or Nothing is up. The first Fyter Fest, Fight for the Fallen, All Out in 2019, and Full Gear. All 2019 episodes of Dynamite. So I think there may have been 12 or so in total. All of those first year episodes are up. And all of the episodes from this past year, from October through December, those are also up on Max. And season one of the All Access show. Remember that All Access reality show where Britt Baker and Adam Cole, they were kind of like the stars of the whole thing? So that is up as well on Max. More to be added on a rolling basis. So we don't have any sort of schedule as far as when everything will be up. I suspect it's going to be like Netflix and the classic episodes of Raw. You can find some right now on Netflix, but you're going to find them very scattershot. And evidently, the plan there is to simply add a little bit more and a little bit more every few months. So I suspect with AEW, it's going to be the same thing because they're going to want people to buy their Max subscription. They're not going to want everybody who wants to watch the classic stuff to subscribe once, watch it all, and then cancel. So that's the plan as far as the uploading of content. But tonight's show, Adam Copeland, back in the ring for the first time since he broke his leg at Double or Nothing back in May. And I sit here and I tell you that Adam Copeland is back, and Adam Copeland was in the main event tonight, the rated R superstar. But I stand corrected, everybody. See, I'm wrong. When I sit here and tell you that Adam Copeland is back, Adam Copeland is not back. Because now, for reasons unexplained, it is now just Cope. That's his new name. And it's not just the nickname. That's the name that they want him to go by, because boy, did they say the word Cope over and over and over again. I feel like that's a good word to describe what many fans were doing or not wanting to do when it came to AEW numbers as the year went on. It was harder and harder to cope as the numbers went down and down. But Cope is now going to be his new name going forward. And I just, you know, I sat here and I just thought to myself, is Vince McMahon working for Tony Khan? Did he not bring in Shane? He brought in Vince secretly? Like TNA tried to secretly bring in Tessa Blanchard? Is that what happened here? Where now he's just Cope. I mean, this is like a Vince McMahon special here where somebody has a name and then they cut it in half. Or they lose their first name altogether and they just go by their last name. Now it's Cope. I can see it now. Coming soon to the merch shop, it's going to be Cope Harder t-shirts. I'm going to try to make money off that. Cope Harder, that's going to be his new t-shirt. Oh my God. I don't get it. I honestly don't know what the genesis of this was. I don't know if Adam Copeland woke up one morning and said, yeah, you know what? I think Cope sounds cool, right? Because, you know, Tony Khan didn't go over to him and go, you know what, Adam, We're going to cut your name down to Cope. I think that's what we're going to do. No, it didn't work that way. So this was his idea. I would love to know the idea behind it. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't change anything else about him or his persona, but you know, it was hard enough for people to get used to Adam Copeland when he came in. I mean, how long was it before Jim Ross got hip to the fact that he wasn't Edge anymore and stopped calling him Edge on God? Poor JR now. I feel bad for him. If Copeland finds his way into like another pay-per-view main event match and they have Jim Ross on commentary, this fucking guy's not going to remember to call him Cope. You keep changing the guy's name on poor JR. What are you doing to the guy? Cope. Well, we're going to have to cope with it, whether you like it or not, because that's his new name. And he was in the main event tonight, and he got a win over the Death Riders to try to give him and the babyfaces, him and FTR, some momentum. Because somebody needs momentum against the Death Riders. The Death Riders story is just dying on the vine, okay? I've said this before. The Death Riders stuff just fucking sucks. So they need to inject some life into it in some way. And one of the things that they needed to do was to give them a formidable challenger, give them someone who will actually one-up them and stand up to them and have them back on their heels. And that's what they did in the main event tonight by giving Copeland and FTR the win. And obviously they're setting up for a Copeland-Moxley match at some point. We don't know when. Could be Australia. Grand Slam coming up next month. But what they also announced tonight is that next week on Dynamite, they did two things tonight, actually, as far as next week, which was smart to get people to tune in to next week's show. Because, you know, everybody was talking about Fight for the Fallen, and it's the first Max simulcast. But what about next week, right? That's January 1st. What about next week? What about January 8th? What's going to happen then, right? Well, next week, we're going to get another Casino Gauntlet match. This is a Tony Khan special. He loves these Casino Gauntlet matches. And I can understand why, because they've done, what, four of them, I think? Three or four of them at this point. And they've all been great. They're always fun. You just don't want to overdo them. So it's been a little while. It's been a few months. And so they're going to bust it out again next week. The winner of that gauntlet match, the following week, on January 15th, will challenge Jon Moxley on their Maximum Carnage episode of Dynamite for the AEW World Championship. And I don't expect that Adam Copeland is going to be in the gauntlet and win next week. So it looks like there'll be somebody else in the interim who will challenge Jon Moxley. We don't know who that's going to be because the only person we know for sure who's in the gauntlet next week, actually two of them, is Jay White, who won a triple threat match tonight to earn the number one spot in the gauntlet, which is important because in these AEW gauntlets, you need to be in there early because it can end at any moment. Doesn't help you if you come into the gauntlet last, right? Like a gauntlet match in WWE, you want to come in last. You don't want to be number one in the gauntlet. In AEW, it's the total opposite. He will enter first as he tries to once again get a crack at the world championship. But outside of him, and we had Jeff Jarrett, who I'm going to get to, who declared himself for the gauntlet. Why one person has to qualify, by the way, and one doesn't, and they could just declare. It's like the Royal Rumble thing. Some people, like in the past, I feel like we've had some qualifying situations, right? But then you have somebody who will show up and be like, I'm going to be in the Royal Rumble. Well, why wouldn't everybody declare for the Royal Rumble? It's like here, why wouldn't everybody want to be in the Casino Gauntlet match next week? If you know that there's a world championship match on the line. Why, Powerhouse Hobbs tonight, right? Powerhouse Hobbs had a handicap match. How come he didn't get on the mic when the match was over and say, put me in the gauntlet, right? He'll probably be in there anyway. It's just one of those things that is unexplained. But Jay White is going to be number one in that gauntlet match next week. I mentioned Jeff Jarrett. You know, one of the things that I have talked about here on my streams and on the podcast, and I've given praise to Tony Khan for this, is the way that he treats the legends in his company. Sting being a shining example of Tony Khan going out of his way to honor someone with the kind of history in the business that Sting had was a very cool thing to see because he got the send-off that he deserved at Revolution last year. And it was one of the greatest moments in AEW history, right? Sting's run is just tops. Bryan Danielson is another one. Tony Khan wanted him to win the world championship at All In at Wembley, and he did, and it made for a great moment, and it was one of the best matches all year last year. So that's great. Now, we come to Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff Jarrett, at World's End, teased that he was going to have an announcement of some kind on Dynamite this week. And obviously, the first thought that pops into your head is that he's going to retire. What else could it be, right? Unless it's a big swerve. They wanted you to think it's going to be him showing up and saying that he's winding down. He's getting ready to call it a day in the business. He shows up tonight. He gets in the ring. And in fact, not only is he not calling it quits and hanging it up, but Jeff Jarrett made it very clear that he has signed his final talent contract. He has signed a new deal with AEW. And I don't know if that's just part of the storyline or if he did in fact sign a new deal. He might have signed a new deal. Dustin Rhodes just signed a new deal. Yeah, Dustin Rhodes is another one. He's had this great run for the last few years. He was talking like his career, he was going to call it quits a couple of years ago. He's still going. You know, he's one half of the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions right now. But he's not out there competing for the AEW World Championship, right? Jeff Jarrett says, not only am I sticking around, I want to hold gold in AEW in 2025. Now I'm starting to sweat bullets here as I'm listening to this promo and I'm watching him speak here in the middle of this ring and I'm like, oh God. You know, with the Owen Hart tournament, didn't bother me so much. He had that personal relationship with Owen. They told a great story with him, what Owen meant to him and why being in this tournament would be so important to him. And I said, you know what? I don't have an issue with him getting in there and being in the first round. Even if you wanted to throw him a win and have him win one match and get bounced out of the next round, right? I could understand that. That story made sense. And that's a story I feel like people could get behind. But this is a bridge too far. He's standing in the ring and he says he wants gold, but not only does he want gold, he wants the AEW world title. Well, Jeff, you're in luck because I got news for you. Jeff Jarrett, and I got news for all of you too. Jeff Jarrett absolutely could hold the AEW world championship. You're going to call me crazy. He could absolutely hold the AEW world championship. In fact, I will help him along. There it is right there. You can go right now to shopaew.com, and Jeff Jarrett, I'm sure he's getting paid very handsomely by Tony Khan, he could go and spend $800. It's right there, $799.99. You too, Jeff Jarrett, could be the AEW world champion with your very own replica, because that is about as close to the AEW world title as I want to see Jeff Jarrett get in 2025. We'll even ship in for the shipping. This is the story that they're going to tell now with Jeff Jarrett this year, that he wants to be the AEW world champion. So at some point, we know he's going to get an opportunity for it. And with Tony Khan, I mean, who knows? Tony Khan may want to pay homage to Jeff Jarrett and give him a run with the fucking world title. He's been a world champion in a lot of other places, right? Not in WWE, but he was a world champion in WCW. He was a world champion in TNA many times. Did he hold gold in Global Force? He was selling Global Force gold. I remember that. I don't remember if he held gold in Global Force Wrestling. I have no appetite whatsoever to see Jeff Jarrett holding the world championship, although it's nice to have goals. But like I said, you want gold? There it is. You can buy it right now and be the happiest man in the world. You can put it on your wall. You can mount it, put it on display. That's as close to that title as he's going to get. The only good thing I could say about that, it was part of a recurring theme on this show where you had a lot of different people who were expressing their desire to be the AEW world champion. So Jeff Jarrett was one. And again, I have no interest in seeing that. And I think it's ridiculous that we're even devoting television time to this shit at a time where there's so many other fucking people who are not featured on this show. But Jeff Jarrett wants to be the AEW world champion. MJF tonight, this was a positive step. He finally woke up from his coma and realized, oh shit, something's missing since I came back last year. In the spring, he suddenly realized he doesn't have the Triple B. Now he wants to go back after the AEW World Championship. Good. Long past time for him to go back after that world title. Hangman Adam Page, I don't know where they're going with him. We're going to talk about him as well. But obviously, he still wants to be the world champion. Jay White, he still wants to be the champion. He's going to be number one, right, in that gauntlet next week. Adam Copeland. Cope. He wants John Moxley. He wants to be the champion. All of this is good because what it does is it illustrates the importance of a championship, which, by the way, a championship we haven't even seen since October. It's been locked away, supposedly, in a briefcase. But it makes the title feel important that all of these different people want to get their hands on. So that's a plus, because it makes your championship seem like the most valuable thing in the entire world, which it should be. So that's a plus. Now, as far as the different stories that we saw playing out on the show tonight, we had Copeland and Moxley, and the crowd was into it because they were in North Carolina, which is where Copeland and FTR live. And obviously, with the hurricane and the hurricane relief efforts, they've been very instrumental in that, so the people love them. They love them. They got a great reaction tonight, but they're furthering that story. Another great thing on the show tonight, and maybe my favorite part of the entire show, was Ricochet. When Ricochet, we last saw him at World's End over the weekend, he had toilet paper wrapped around his neck, and people were making fun of him. People were saying, look at this image. King Ricochet standing there. He is covered in toilet paper. This man's career is in the gutter. And as I told you, I said, look, pump the brakes on that. This is what they're going for with Ricochet. I think Ricochet, it's starting to bear some fruit with the heel stuff. I think Ricochet is going to be okay. He's heading into a feud with the former AEW World Champion. Let's see what happens on Dynamite this week. It's important that they follow up in a way that demonstrates that he is not happy with what happened on Saturday at World's End. If he just shows up and he's smiling and he's cocky and he's arrogant, that would be a mistake. Well, tonight he showed up. And he wasn't smiling. He was laughing maniacally, but he wasn't smiling. He wasn't happy. He wasn't doing any bird mating calls. He went out there. He looked like a psychopath. He made Swerve Strickland bleed. He had Swerve's blood on his head, on his shirt, on his jacket. That's exactly what they needed to do with Ricochet tonight. And hopefully that will shut up some of the people who said, oh, he's buried. Oh, he's done. That's it. This is it. Look at this. He lost the Continental Classic. He's drenched in toilet paper. Ricochet out there tonight. Look fine to me. Looks like they're setting up for what should be a fun match between him and Swerve, right? Those two now have their program set. That was one of the best parts of the entire show. The other thing they announced tonight, we didn't get him on the show. I wasn't expecting him necessarily to be on the show because we have Wrestle Dynasty is this weekend. My guess is he's already in Tokyo. Kenny Omega. We saw him at World's End. He came out to present the Continental title to Kazuchika Okada. They were teasing a future match between the two of them. He's wrestling his first match in over a year this weekend, this Sunday against Gabe Kidd at the Tokyo Dome. And now we know that Kenny Omega will be back on Dynamite next week. And that's a great thing because AEW could use Kenny Omega back on this show. ASAP, get him back in the mix. This is a good thing. Getting Kenny back on TV, getting MJF back in the world title mix, right? These are positive steps. But it's smart for them to hold off one more week and say, hey, if you want to see Kenny Omega, you got to tune into the show next week. You tune in next week, you get Kenny and you get the gauntlet match. So I think they set things up well to hopefully have people want to tune in to see what they're going to do in week two. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can try to claw back a lot of that audience that they hemorrhaged in 2024. And we're not talking about a small loss. I talked about this in my year in review. Now, how the show went from averaging 800,000 to 900,000 people tuning into Dynamite every week at the beginning of last year to at the end of this year, this past year, 500,000 to 600,000. And I said, where did those 350,000 people go? They had to go somewhere. Went to Mondays and Fridays, but you know, where'd they go? one of his goals should be to try to get those people back. The way you get people back is by having focused stories and stars that people want to see. That's where people like Omega and MJF could really help Tony Khan and Swerve and a lot of other people they have on that roster right now that he could tap into and utilize better in the new year. That's my hope. That's my hope. Not for Cope, but that's my hope in 2025. I'm less interested in seeing Adam Copeland main eventing matches and more interested in some of these other names that I just mentioned. That's who Tony Khan should build around in the new year. This is your AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen review. It is New Year's Day. It is 2025, the first full stream of the new year. We were streaming overnight. I had a lot of people joining me for my annual New Year's Eve stream, Make It Till Midnight. We made it to midnight. We went to midnight and we went beyond. And if you missed it, go back and check it out. It's long, but we had a lot of fun last night. We did a bunch of Be the Bookers. We'll try to do at least one Be the Booker tonight. We'll see if we do more. But thank you to everybody who joined me on the stream last night. Like I said, I had a lot of fun, a lot of tremendous support. Very thankful for that. And now we start a brand new year because the shows don't stop. The content doesn't stop. It just keeps rolling on. So hit that subscribe button, like, and super chats are open as well as they come in. You'll see them popping up on your screen. I will, of course, be reading your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. There was actually more news. Yeah, I mentioned that this is a new era. What I was going to say is when the show started tonight, we had brand new music. Dynamite has new music. So does the Judgment Day. This was the week of new music. The Judgment Day got newer, inferior music. And Dynamite got newer music, too. Whether or not you think it's inferior, it's going to be up to you. The new opening theme for AEW Dynamite is I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters. Yes. Yes. In the same week where Tony Khan has confirmed that they're once again going to bring back Elton John, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, for Collision, because they started Collision with that as the song, and then they got away from it, and now they're going back to it this weekend. So it's a weird thing that we sit here now, it's 2025, and we have the Pointer Sisters as the official theme song for Dynamite. We have Elton John as the official theme song for Collision. And we're back to Obsession by Animotion for Saturday night's main event. I feel like I'm in a time warp. But for me, I'm okay with that because I don't mind music like this. Like if you looked at my Spotify, yeah, I got a lot of current shit. I got a lot of Bad Bunny and all kinds of stuff like that. But I love the old shit. Right? I am an old shit. I love the old shit. So I'm okay with it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. You want to probably have a more modern theme song. I'm not saying that the Pointer Sisters would be my first choice. But I'm not going to hate on it either. The other thing I noticed about tonight's show, and this is not necessarily new, although we haven't seen them use it lately on this show. But I do think for a while there, they started using this new kind of zoomed out, elevated hard camera view. And then they went away from it and they went back to it tonight. Whatever the reason was, it was just a little production change that I noticed. I'm kind of indifferent towards it. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I don't think it's a bad thing to change things up production wise every now and then, like they did with the music. So, I mean, that's fine, but just something I thought I would point out. But we had a Jon Moxley promo that aired. A bunch of whippersnappers. That's right. Get off my fucking lawn. If I had a lawn, that's what I would be saying. I'd be saying, get off of it, or I'm going to throw eggs at you. We had a Jon Moxley promo that aired pre-taped, coming out of World's End. This is how we started. He talked about his enemies, talking about what they want to do, but that's not what happens when the bullets start flying. And that reminds me, actually, before I even go on here, I just wanted to make mention of... I'm sure all of you have heard about what happened in New Orleans earlier this morning. It's wild because as I was wrapping up the stream, I guess, not long after that is when all of that, mayhem broke out on Bourbon Street. And then I heard about it when I woke up this morning about the crazy person who went and drove down Bourbon Street and killed a bunch of people and opened fire on the cops. Just a horrible situation. As somebody who has been to New Orleans and who has been on Bourbon Street, it's a fun place. It's one of those places where I'd love to go back. And the people down there are just, they're fun. They're nice. The culture down there. I love my two times that I was there. And so seeing those scenes on the news was really shitty to see. And I know that we have some people who might be with me right now on the stream, but certainly I know I have fans of the show who live in Louisiana. They live in and around the New Orleans area. Hopefully you are safe. Hopefully you are okay. And I was very sorry to hear about that. So hopefully you guys are okay. But Moxley praised Marina Shafir for taking a bullet for him. This was back at World's End when she took a Blade Runner from Jay White. And he asked what bullets others will take for their goals. Moxley said he grabbed the company by the strap and carried it through the pandemic. And he's taken bullet after bullet ever since. He rejected the idea that he's a rebel because rebels have an authority that they are fighting against. And no one has authority over him. He called himself a king and he would show that to rated FTR later. So again, you know, talking in these big platitudes and what does it all mean? You know, he's trying to sound cool. He's trying to sound intimidating. And that's, you know, the Death Riders, that's what their whole gimmick is. They go around, they beat people up, they hit people with hammers. It just rings hollow. It's missing that ingredient that is must see. Like, oh my God, these guys, I want to see these guys get taken down so badly. Or, you know, boy, these guys, they're doing things that just haven't been done before. It's just very tame, very kind of run of the mill, and we still don't know what the mission statement is. At the end of the day, they haven't really articulated that. It's just, and this is their key storyline. They have to change things up in some way. They've got to do something or introduce people beyond just Cope to try to heat this thing up and make this interesting. And hopefully they will begin to do that now that we know Kenny Omega's coming back. MJF wants the world championship. I'm hoping that in the near future, some of these names will, you know, perhaps be incorporated into this angle in some way. They go backstage live and FTR is there with Copeland. Said that they were fighting for Western North Carolina tonight. Copeland said that if the Death Riders want to take out all of his friends, then it is time to fight back. Opening match of the night saw two of the challengers in the four-way at World's End, two of the losers at World's End, go one-on-one in Orange Cassidy and Hangman Adam Page. Page planted Cassidy to the floor with a springboard lariat and then sent him crashing into the barricade. He was getting some positive chants from the crowd, too, and Hangman didn't care. He flipped off the fans. But he was distracted by this for too long, and Cassidy backdropped out of a powerbomb attempt. Back inside, Page caught a crossbody and delivered a fallaway slam into the corner. Cassidy got a Stun Dog Millionaire that sent Hangman outside, and he wanted a dive. Hangman caught him, though. Cassidy avoided the apron powerbomb, but not a fallaway slam on the ramp. That put Hangman in control during the break. This is where I started to see some complaints online from people who said, I'm watching on Max and I'm getting ads. What is this? I'm switching back to TBS. I am very curious, though, what the Dynamite numbers are going to be this week. Obviously, they're going to be lower. There's going to be a certain number of people who did stream the show. How many people, though? That's what I would love to know. How many people do you think are going to be streaming Dynamite on Max? Like, is Max going to release numbers? Are they going to give us a sense of, oh, this many people tuned in to see Dynamite? Probably not. But I would be curious to know. Page wanted a buckshot lariat. Cassidy, though, did the slow roll out to the floor to avoid it. And that forced Hangman to give chase. They repeated the spot again, which only pissed off Hangman even more. Cassidy wanted a top rope DDT. He got caught. And Hangman wanted a lawn dart. Cassidy, though, countered into multiple DDTs. Hangman wanted the buckshot. Cassidy countered into a poor-looking beach break. It was more like a backdrop. But they passed it off as a beach break for a two count. Cassidy connected multiple orange punches. Page rolled to the apron. Cassidy stumbled around. He was getting ready for another shot, but instead, he got caught with a buckshot lariat, and Hangman got the win. When the match was over, Hangman attacked him again and hit two dead eyes. He hit one, and then he stood up with him again and dropped him on his head for a second time. Referees come out. Christopher Daniels comes out. Now, Christopher Daniels on World's End, he came out after Okada won the Continental Classic, and he announced that he is no longer an EVP because Kenny Omega's back. Now, they made it clear he's still in some sort of management position. We don't know what his title is, but he still works in management in AEW. So he's in the ring, and he gets up in Hangman's face, and he eats a right hand for his troubles. And Daniels is pleading that, you know, I'm your friend. But he got booted in the face. And Hangman went to the back, and he was yelling for Daniels to stay out of his business. I thought that it was a solid opener. Not a great match, but it was a solid opener. When I said that I wanted to see what Tony Khan had in store for Hangman coming out of World's End, this is not what I envisioned. Feuding with Christopher Daniels is not what I envisioned. Now, is he going to feud with Daniels and wrestle Daniels, or is this, I'm wondering, some way to, kind of work the Elite back into things? Are we going to get something with the Elite and Hangman again? I don't know. Do they factor into this in some way? Is he going to be in the Casino Gauntlet next week? Right? He should be. But I don't think they made that official. We don't know most of the names that are going to be in that Casino Gauntlet next week. The idea that he would be in it, maybe he'll win. But if he's got something going on with Daniels, the likelihood of him winning if he's in the match is very slim. So probably not. So I don't know where this is going. But whatever it is, I mean, he's got to be doing better than this. There has got to be something bigger and better in store for Hangman Page. Even though he just was part of the main event at World's End, challenging for the championship, it just feels like he has been cooled off unnecessarily coming out of that cage match with Swerve back in September. Name one thing of any real significant note that he has done since All Out. Swerve's got some things going on. He had some stuff going on with the Hurt Business and now with Ricochet. So, I mean, he's got some directions at least. I mean, you could disagree with the direction they're going with him, but he's got things going on. Hangman is just in this weird position where it just feels like he's aimlessly sort of wandering around to different people, but I don't see the vision for him. I need some clarity on the vision. What are they going to do with this man? Because he was one of the better parts of the show in 2024. And I would like to see that carry over into 2025. Working with Christopher Daniels that's not the answer. It's got to be more to it than that. Backstage, we got an interview with Jay White where he said that 2025 didn't start out as he planned, and he placed the blame on Wheeler Yuta for interrupting his pinfall at World's End. He said, words cannot do it justice, but he would show Yuta and Moxley how he feels about that very soon. He then addressed his match tonight with Swerve and Roderick Strong. They were having a three-way match and said that he would not allow them to be obstacles on his way back to the Gauntlet next week and to the AEW World Championship. We had the Hurt Syndicate, who were not on the pay-per-view, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin taking on the Acclaimed. Yeah, they come out and they say that everybody loves the Acclaimed. I'm not so sure about that. Not anymore, they don't. They used to, but definitely not like it used to be. Now, as the Acclaimed were making their entrance, they aired an inset promo from earlier where Anthony Bowens asked Max Caster, did you hit me with the Ring of Honor World Championship intentionally? During his match on Rampage, the final Rampage aired last Friday, then we had Anthony Bowens against Chris Jericho. He wanted to know if his partner hit him with the belt on purpose or not. So Caster said that he didn't, and he said that Bowens needs to get focused because tonight with the Hurt Syndicate, there's no scissoring. He's not even going to rap on his way to the ring. It's going to be Anthony Bowens and the best wrestler alive. And Bowens was tired of hearing about it, and he walked off. So the Acclaimed, immediately in this match, they begin arguing about who should start. That led to Lashley running over both of them, and he launched Max Caster with an overhead belly-to-belly. Excalibur brought up MVP, giving Caster his business card a while back, and MVP was on commentary for this. And he said that he took too long to answer, while Lashley and Benjamin both said that they didn't want him. Caster got off one elbow, a back elbow, before being clotheslined outside, and Shelton Benjamin was throwing him repeatedly into the barricade. Bowens is just watching this. He's on the apron, and he's watching this play out. Back inside, Caster, he floated over a suplex. He dove for a hot tag to Anthony Bowens. Bowens was in there, I'd say, maybe 30 seconds, if that, before Caster blind tagged himself back in. So now they're arguing again. And that led to some Suplex City from Shelton Benjamin on Max Caster. Bowens, meanwhile, he drops off the apron, and he's just going to watch. He's standing on the outside. He is just an observer now. He is a wrestling observer as he is watching this match, and he is watching his partner get his ass handed to him. Lashley makes the tag. He hits a spear. He hits a spine buster. He got the Hurt Lock applied for the quick submission. And Bowens, he didn't say this on the microphone, but like the camera picked up on him saying when the match was over, Caster is not the best wrestler alive. He is a selfish asshole. And he walked to the back. The Hurt Syndicate looked dominant here, and you got most of the fans, I dare say, wanting to cheer these men. It's the same problem. I don't even know if problem is the right word for it. You have the same issue that you had with the Hurt Business in WWE, where they come off, they have the cool factor about them. And of course, I mean, they're going out there and they're beating the hell out of people. They're kicking ass. What's not to love? The people cheer them, even though they're not really supposed to be baby faces. Again, whether or not you think that's a problem is in the eye of the beholder. But people still love the Hurt Business, Hurt Syndicate, call them whatever you want to. They just don't want to boo these two. But as far as the Acclaimed is concerned, it is incredible. And maybe it shouldn't be, because Tony Khan, you know, his booking in 2024 in a lot of ways left a lot to be desired. But think about where the Acclaimed was a year ago. Look at where the Acclaimed is today. Scary. It is scary how ice cold they are now. Like when they come out, the reactions they used to get compared to the lack of reaction now, it's sad. And now obviously they're working this breakup angle. They're teasing a breakup. But even before that, even before they started really going in hard on the teases, just listen to the reactions, right? It's nowhere near what they used to be. So you have people who are of a mindset where they don't think that the Acclaim should be broken up because you need them in the tag team division. And I can understand that. But at the same time, they're not over at the level they used to be. They, I think, played out the daddy ass stuff and all that as much as they can. They got as much out of it as they could. I'm not saying that one day you can't find a way to get the people to give a shit again about the Acclaim, but I'm not of the opinion that, oh, you have to keep them together. I feel actually just the opposite. And clearly they are at least teasing the idea that they are going to split. It was interesting to hear MVP talk about how the offer to Max Caster expired, because he didn't respond in time, right? So they basically, you know, pulled their offer to him. Everybody is focused on Max Caster. I'll tell you what I would do. What I would do is basically pull a swerve here. It should be Anthony Bowens joining the Hurt Syndicate. That's what I would do. That's what I think needs to be done. Anthony Bowens should be the one joining Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. Because if you're worried about, well, the Acclaim gets split, Look at Santana and Ortiz, right? I mean, that didn't work out too well for them when they split them up. Yes, it could go sideways very easily, and they could end up on Ring of Honor, you know, and it could be far worse where they don't even see them on Dynamite anymore. Max Caster, you know what? Yes, that could happen to him. Anthony Bowens, there's something with Anthony Bowens that I think can be tapped into as far as a singles run is concerned. And I think that if he joins the Hurt Syndicate, that would ensure that he would get television time. He would be visible on TV. I think the cool factor of the Hurt Syndicate would rub off on him, and I think it would do him a lot of good. Can't speak to Caster, but for Bowens, I think that's the way to go. Swerve Strickland was backstage with Prince Nana, interviewed by Alex Marvez, and talked about tonight's three-way match. Strickland apologized for the fans who continue to chant his name as he's been distracted recently, but that changes tonight. He'll remind everybody why, just like in 2024, that 2025 will be Swerve's house. Forgetting, of course, that Hangman burned his house down. Strickland said that he's never been in a casino gauntlet before and asks Marvez, do you know why? He says it's because he's always been a world champion when they happened. We had Jamie Hayter against Julia Hart. Here's another example. You talk about a talent that went from hot to cold. Went from the penthouse to the outhouse. That is the story of Jamie Hayter from pre-injury to post-injury. But this was Julia Hart's first match back. Speaking of injuries, the last time we saw her in the ring was Dynasty in April when she lost her TBS championship to Willow Nightingale. Julia wanted a crossbody off the apron. She got caught. And this was, I mean, this was a hilarious spot. Now, look, Julia Hart is not a... She's not a big woman to begin with. She's tiny. But, like, no, there was, like, no effort to even put anything into this. Like, it just looked like she fell off the apron. Like, here, catch me. So JB Hayter catching her didn't look impressive at all. Hayter wanted to suplex her on the steps. Hart floated over and slammed Jamie back first onto the steps. Hayter did mount a comeback. She went for the lariat, missed. But the hate breaker connected for a two count. Hayter then ran into a corner boot. Julia wanted a moonsault. She rolled through, hit a back heel trip for two. She applied Heartless. Hayter, though, powered her way up to her feet. And Julia tried a crucifix counter, only for Jamie to hit a Death Valley driver across the knee in a sliding lariat for a two count. So Hayter wanted a superplex, and Julia swept out the leg. And Jamie took a hell of a fall. She's clutching her rib cage, and the referee is checking on her to make sure she's okay. This allows Julia Hart to go outside and retrieve an arrow. And I've seen the vignettes of her with the arrow. I know that's where the arrow is from, but still, she's got a fucking arrow. Wasn't CM Punk was just talking about arrows on Raw this week and all the arrows that were thrown at him. Going to take those arrows now. He's going to shove them down Seth Rollins' corporate throat on Raw next Monday. See, the old CM Punk would talk about how he's going to take those arrows and shove them up his ass. So now we had an actual arrow here on this show. Julia brings the arrow into the ring. Now, this was a distraction that was intended for Aubrey Edwards to grab the arrow and dispose of it, which is what she did. But as she's doing that, Julia mists Jamie in the face and then covers her and gets the pin. And Jamie Hayter is writhing around in pain on the floor after the match. I don't know what level of mist on the Muda scale it was. I don't know if it was yellow or black. I think it was black. But yeah, she was writhing around in pain on the ground outside. I'll tell you what, though, for her first match back, I thought Julia looked okay. This honestly was nothing special. Jamie Hayter is not on Dynamite very often. So you would hope that when we do get to see her on this show, that she's maximizing her minutes. I wouldn't say that this match maximized the minutes for either one of these women, but at least in the case of Julia, first match back, get that out of the way. Jamie Hayter has been back. Okay, Jamie Hayter has been back since August. It is now January. And you can count the number of times that she has been on Dynamite and still have fingers left over, but you can count the number of times she's been in anything meaningful on Dynamite and have pretty much all of your fingers, which is to say that she hasn't been doing anything. And you talk about going from hot to cold. It's just to say that she's lost steam. I feel like that's the understatement of the century. She has no steam. Whatever it was that she had before the injury just isn't there right now. Now, that could be solved by getting her involved in a really good program on this show with somebody. And I'm not even saying it has to be against Mariah May right now, although that should be the direction. But obviously they're building to Mariah and Tony. That's going to come first. So Jamie just feels like she's in a holding pattern. Now you could build to Jamie and Mercedes. And that would be great because that's a first time ever match we've never seen before. And if you're going to do that, then I think I would love to see Jamie Hayter be the one, right, to beat Mercedes Moné. But you've got to heat her up first somehow. This is not the way you do it. This program here, it's something for her to do. This is not going to heat anybody up. She needs to be involved in something really, really good to get the people really invested in her again. And then she could go after the TBS title. Or then she could go after the AEW Women's World title. But I've been saying this now for months. Like, I understand not bringing her back in August and immediately thrusting her into a world championship match, right? Even though, like MJF, she absolutely has a case for saying, look, I lost my championship, but not under the right circumstances. Okay, I kind of got cheated out of my title here. I want another shot at it. We haven't heard her say anything about it. She's just back. She's not doing anything. It's been 4 months now, 5 months, whatever it's been. It's time to start getting her involved in shit that matters on this show. I feel like if Jamie Hayter was somewhere else, she would be in a much more prominent position right now than Tony Khan has her in. And if he doesn't want to lose her to someone else, then he needs to work to get her involved in something very soon. Because it's sad when I see her out there and it just feels like nobody cares. And it just feels like it's just another person. This woman should be a star on this show. She was at one time a star. She was one of the top stars in the company, not just the division, in the company. I want her to get back to that. Let's start the path to get her back to where she was before. I don't see this helping her along the way. Now, the fact that she was misted in the face, I know that with the mist in the past, when Julia has used it on people, sometimes they go dark and they go to the dark side. I don't know if that's the plan with Jamie. She's going to go to the dark side. I hope not. I really hope that they get away from this and they get her involved in something meaningful. It's just sad, you know, to look at some of these people that they have under contract who had a good thing going at one time. I'm not even going to mention Wardlow because I'm just so tired of mentioning his name. But, you know, you can use him as an example, too. And then nothing. You know, it's like they just run out of gas or they get hurt and they leave. And then by the time they come back, it's like, well, we don't really have anything for you. You know, you missed your shot. And it shouldn't be that way. They aired a video package on the latest chapter of the Will Ospreay-Kyle Fletcher rivalry, with Ospreay getting his win back at World's End after losing to Fletcher at Full Gear. Nothing to it, really. Neither man was actually on the show. I would imagine Ospreay went home, you know, for the holidays. As long as we get him back on TV, you know, next week, then I don't see any issue with that. But he's another one who... trying to think, beyond the rubber match with Kyle Fletcher, what you would do next with Will Ospreay. Because if he's not going to be wrestling for the championship for a while, then what do you do with him? He's been the international champion already, so you're not going to necessarily go back to him and Takeshita. Him and MJF, that's already been done. Him and Hangman hasn't been done. Right? As far as like a real program. That could be interesting, actually. Ospreay and Hangman. I see that I can get behind. That, I think, could be fun. But obviously, they're building to a third match between him and Kyle Fletcher because they're tied at one win apiece. We also got a video recapping Kazuchika Okada's win in the Continental Classic and Kenny Omega's return for the title presentation when it was over. This is where they announced that Kenny would be back on Dynamite next Wednesday. We then got a pre-recorded promo from Okada, who gloated about defeating Ospreay and being the best tournament wrestler in the world. He questioned how many times he had to beat Omega and told him to stay out of his business, bitch. And they did it again tonight, by the way, where they zoomed in on that All In Texas banner. That's 7 months away. So it's interesting that they're already going so hard in on promoting this match, seemingly for All In, when we are so far away from that show. But that really is the best place to do it. So unless they were going to do something in Australia, and they're not running actually a stadium anymore in Australia. They're running a smaller venue now, but All In really is the place that they should be doing that match. We come back into the arena, though, and we have the TBS champion, and still, Mercedes Moné makes her entrance for her New Year's celebration. This is hot off her win over Chris Statlander, her second straight win over Chris Statlander at World's End. She gets in the ring, and her New Japan Strong Women's Championship is on display in the ring. And she claimed to be the greatest TBS champion of all time. She introduced a video package that showed basically highlights of her run that she had last year. She then said that her first stop in 2025 is going to be the Tokyo Dome and her match with Mina Shirakawa. This may well have been the first mention on television that she's even going to have a match at the Tokyo Dome. If it was mentioned before, it was a fleeting mention. Here, they devoted almost an entire segment to it because we're only a few days away from Wrestle Dynasty. And it's like, oh, shit, we better give this the hard sell because it's not just a New Japan show. It's a joint show with AEW and New Japan and CMLL. And it just so happens to only be a few days away. So this is the first hard sell that we've even had for this match. This match wasn't even official up until 2 weeks ago. And so she says that she is going to put her strong women's title on the line. And Mina had gold that she wanted in the Rev Pro Women's Championship. This was a nothing segment. It existed merely to remind you, oh, by the way, Mercedes is defending her New Japan Strong, not even her AEW TBS title, her New Japan Strong Women's Championship at the Tokyo Dome this weekend. That was it. They played her music and she danced off. CEO, CEO, CEO. This was a nothing segment. This was a waste of time. We had a video package talking about Fight for the Fallen's partnering with the American Red Cross and multiple charities to help Hurricane Helene victims in rebuilding. Dax Harwood was shown presenting a check to the World Central Kitchen and the Asheville Dream Center. Of course, he and Cash and Cope all live in and around, they might actually be in Asheville, but they're in and around the Asheville area. So this show tonight, the location of the show, very important to them, obviously, because they, if they weren't impacted themselves, they know people who were impacted by those hurricanes, which were just devastating. So that was nice to see them put some attention on that. We go backstage to Alex Marvez with Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong. Cole said, finally, the Undisputed Kingdom is complete. Hold on a second. Yes, that's what I think of the Undisputed Kingdom finally being complete. So O'Reilly said that they have it all covered. Trios, tag teams, singles, triple threats. Roddy said that he could not have said it any better, and tonight he's going to win the triple threat match, and he reminds them that in the gauntlet match, it's every man for himself. And that led into the three-way match. Switchblade Jay White, Swerve Strickland, and Roderick Strong. The winner gets the number one spot, the number one entry in the Casino Gauntlet match next week. And again, you want that first spot in these gauntlets because it ends after one fall. It's one fall to a finish. So the first person to get a pinfall or a submission wins the entire thing. If you're going to be coming out at number 11 in the gauntlet and you don't get to come out, tough luck. So the earlier you get in, the better your chances are going to be that you can walk away the winner. I have no idea why Roderick Strong was in this match. I have no idea why Roderick Strong was in competition with Jay White and Swerve Strickland for a spot in the gauntlet when we haven't seen Roddy do anything since losing to MJF at Full Gear and getting his arm broken. Although it became clear why he was in the match when it came to the finish and who took the loss. So I guess there's your answer. It's like Commander being in the Continental Classic to replace Juice Robinson. Why do you think Commander was in the Continental Classic? Why do you think the Beast Mortos was in the Continental Classic and the other group? One reason. That's it. So after a commercial break, all three men were fighting up in the corner. Everybody crashed down. Swerve got to his feet first. Powerbomb Roddy into Jay White in the corner. As he went for a rolling flatliner, Strong countered into a code breaker on Strickland and then an angle slam and a tiger driver on Jay White for a two count. Strickland hit a standing swerve stomp on Roddy, missed the house call kick. White wanted the Blade Runner but missed. Strickland hit the rolling flatliner. Swerve wanted a swerve stomp. Roddy cut him off. Jay White rolled to the floor and Strickland was left to decide, who do I go after? So he settled on Roderick Strong. Pump kick to Strong on the apron. Swerve then walks the barricade and hits another one to Jay White until who should show up in the crowd? Ricochet. Ricochet is right there in the front row, and he's in a suit and a tie. He's got glasses on, and he pulls a Sid Vicious, and he pulls out a pair of scissors. And he attacks Swerve Strickland with the scissors, pops him right in the head. And they were, not only were they scissors, I should point out the fact, whatever the significance of this is, they were golden scissors. Like, I've heard of a golden shovel before. But this was a golden pair of scissors. And he jabbed this man in the head with it. And then he stared down. He looked down at Swerve. He just stood there. He was looking at him like a psychopath. So it turned into a singles match briefly here with Jay White and Roderick Strong, and they got in the ring very quickly. Jay White hit the Blade Runner, and he pinned Roddy, which is the only reason, I suppose, why Roderick Strong was in this match. If we were looking at this from in a kayfabe way, why was he in this match? I don't have a good answer for you. But why was he really in the match? He was in the match so that Swerve wouldn't have to take the pin. This only went 10 minutes, but it was good. It was a good 10 minutes. Ricochet costing Swerve is what made sense. Made total sense to do that. The way that he was embarrassed at World's End, the things that Swerve said about him, the toilet paper stuff, calling him bald, all of this shit. The only thing that Ricochet should have done tonight was go out there and try to maim this man. The worst thing that they could have done, A, was not have him on the show at all, but B, was just have him come out and not get his revenge for what Swerve did to him on Saturday. That would have been death for Ricochet. What they did is exactly what had to be done. Ricochet showed up. There were no smiles. There was no aha. There was not, you know, or caw, whatever. I don't know why I sound like Mickey Mouse every time I do that. But nothing like that. None of the bullshit. None of that stuff. He looked like he was in a trance almost. And you look at him and he's standing there. And again, he's got blood all over him now because Swerve is bleeding all over the place. But the way that they did the Ricochet thing made sense. Jay White on commentary, they really put over hard the fact that he came very close to win the championship at World's End. And so him entering number one next week automatically makes him the favorite to go all the way and get his rematch with Jon Moxley, which he's not going to do, I don't think. But they want you to know, okay, he's automatically now the favorite. He is the favorite now going into next Wednesday. When the match was over, they showed Swerve on the floor outside. He was bleeding a gusher. Ricochet slowly steps over the barricade. And he holds the scissors up to Nana when Nana tries to come over, like, you better back off. Ricochet then drove the scissors into Swerve's bloody head wound. And now his own shirt was covered in Swerve's blood. He's laughing maniacally. He's giving him little headbutts, too, with his glasses on, no less. He's giving him headbutts. Now there's blood. I think it's still Swerve's blood, but blood on his own forehead now. Nana tried to wrestle a chair away from Ricochet, but he got shoved down into the ring steps, and Ricochet hit Swerve with a chair shot across the back. In the ring, he takes him in the ring now, Ricochet sits Swerve down on a chair, and then knocks him out of the chair with the spirit gun. Here comes Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong gets back in the ring, and Ricochet bails, and he continues to laugh. He is laughing maniacally. This is one of those situations where sometimes you really do, from Saturday to Wednesday, have to let it play out. There were so many people who swore this man off after what happened at World's End, it was almost comical to me. And I said, people don't want to admit it, I think, in some cases, because if Ricochet ends up having some success with this gimmick, they don't want to be in a position where they're like, oh, I was wrong, right? So it has to be a failure. It has to suck. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing in the world, but you can't say that this isn't better for Ricochet than him just being himself. He was dead in the water if he's just Ricochet. He needed a change. This is the change that they've gone with. Ricochet is not a big, physically imposing man, okay? So what do you expect him to do? If you're going to turn him heel, he's not going to be a badass heel, okay? That's just not going to work. It's going to be a fucking joke, and people are going to laugh it off. If you are going to turn Ricochet heel, the best way to do it is the way that they have done it so far, which is that he is completely full of himself. He thinks he is the greatest thing in the world. He thinks that the reason AEW exists today is because of Ricochet and the path that he paved. He paved the path for so many people that came after him and wrestled the same style and do all the things that he does, but they don't do them as well as him because there's only one Ricochet, right? That's the way that Ricochet should be handling this heel turn. And that's what they've done with him so far. The fans just have taken throwing toilet paper at him. So you know what? You take it and you run with it. Lean into it. Work it into the gimmick. That's what he's done so far. Now he's going to be working with Swerve Strickland. Now he's got the scissors. And if he doesn't try to use those scissors to cut Swerve's hair, I don't even know what we're doing here, because you have Swerve Strickland going around saying, you bald. You bald. You bald. You bald bitch. Calling him bald, getting the people to call him bald. They're chanting bald. Remember at World's End? Nah, 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 nah. Nah, 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 nah. Hey, hey, hey. You're bald. Okay, that was a chant. That was a real chant during his match with Okada. Okay? If he's not going to use the scissors to try to make Swerve bald, then what are we doing here? Right? It has to happen. Maybe they'll have a hair match. Although I guess Ricochet would have to put something up. He has nothing to put up. Samantha, maybe. I don't know. But for all the times he mocked him for being bald, I mean, he's got scissors, right? It only makes sense. He would go after the hair at some point. Come back from a break, and Alex Marvez is backstage with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh, and they say they have not heard from Jeff Jarrett all day. And wouldn't you know, as soon as they say, guess who shows up? Jeff Jarrett. It's like Joe Hendry. Say his name and he appears. Jarrett shows up and they said, look, whatever you're planning tonight, we support you 100%. They just want to make sure that this is what he wants to do. Karen Jarrett walks in. And she says, we got a serious Karen Jarrett promo here. Very emotional. And she says that this business is what brought the two of them together. Well, that and Kurt Angle. But it's also what has sometimes broken Jeff, right? The business has been good to him, and sometimes it's not so good to him. What Jeff wants, she wants. She says they are unbreakable. And she hands him his wrestling boots as Jeff heads to the ring. Because again, when he made the announcement on Saturday, the immediate thought is he's going to announce his retirement, or he's going to have a retirement tour. You know, this is going to be my final year in wrestling. It's going to be something like that. What else would it be? What, is he cutting a new track? It's been 30 plus years since With My Baby Tonight came out. He's ready to cut track number two. What else is he going to announce? I would have laughed, though, if he would have come out and said, look, have I got an offer for you? And he pulled out one of those gold bars. I would have popped. Elsewhere in the back, Mariah May said that she's had more matches than any other woman in AEW. No other woman is even in the top 10. They were too busy faking injuries, failing auditions, and not remembering who they were, while she left a trail of broken hearts, broken bodies, and minds, while everybody else didn't realize how good she was. Now it's time for others to prove themselves to her. She is the woman from hell. You can't touch her, but she would love to see you try. Oh, I'll bet there's a lot of people in that crowd that would love to try. You better be careful with that. They may take you up on that. Not even a hint about who's next in line for a shot at the AEW Women's World Championship, but the closer we get to Australia, it's got to have to be Toni Storm. And that's coming up in a little over a month. February 15th is when they're doing their Grand Slam show. So now it was time for Double J. There is a guitar set up in the ring. Jeff Jarrett walks to the ring by himself. He does not have any of his friends with him. And he gets in the ring and he says there's so many things that he has to be thankful for in his career, and he wishes everybody a slappy new year. He says it's sad to start thinking about things coming to an end, but it made him think of how things began. He talked about how his grandmother, that's Christine Jarrett, she started selling wrestling tickets and thus changing his family's lives forever. His father became a wrestler and eventually bought the promotion in Tennessee, ran the Tennessee territory. In 1986, when Jeff got into the business, it ultimately, many years later, led to him starting his own promotion in 2002, a place that he says has developed some of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And that's undoubtedly true. Look at the names that have come out of TNA. First two I think of, you want to talk about some of the all-time greats? AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. Right, that's where they cut their teeth. That's where they made names for themselves. Obviously, for Joe, you know, it was Ring of Honor first, but he spent way more time in TNA than he did in Ring of Honor. And there are countless other names as well. I mean, you can talk about Bobby Roode. You could talk about a whole bunch of names that came out of TNA. So he says that the Last Outlaw. Should he ride off into the sunset? He grabs the boots. Should the Last Outlaw ride off into the sunset? He says, the answer is hell no. He swerved us. You know, as he was saying this, I was saying yes. I was playing. I'm sitting here watching the show going, all right, Jeff. Come on, Jeff. It's time. But he says no. He says, when you take the biggest risk, you get the biggest reward. So he just signed his very last wrestling talent contract with AEW. The Last Outlaw wants one ride, one last ride, and he wants AEW gold. And he is talking about taking the biggest risk of his career. What he is talking about, it's not anything other than the big one, because he said you would get a casino gauntlet match next week. Count me in, because Jeff Jarrett wants to, in 2025, to become the world champion. He wants to be the AEW world champion. Okay. And I want a pony, but we can't always get what we want now, can we? But actually, Jeff, again, you can, because there it is once again on AEW Shop. For a cool $800, you can be the AEW World Champion. Let's all pitch in and get Jeff his belt. That'll be our retirement gift to him. You know, some people get a gold watch. We'll get him a gold belt. That's about as close as I want to see him getting to the AEW World Championship. Now, look, if it turns out to be a little TV side quest, no harm, no foul, right? But how much time are they going to devote to this? How far into the future do we wait before we get this match? What is this road going to look like for Jeff Jarrett? What story are they going to tell with him on television? And is it going to take away from any other number of people who we should be seeing on this television show? Jeff Jarrett can still go in there. He knows how to get a great reaction. He just had this match with QT Marshall on the pre-show last weekend. The most basic wrestling match you'll ever see, but it works because QT Marshall knows how to get heat. And Jeff Jarrett, he's the elder statesman at this point, so people cheer for him. So they didn't have to do much. They worked a very basic match, but the crowd reacted and it was fine. And Jarrett can still get by and do matches like that. But as far as him going after the world championship and all this, get the hell out of here. I have no desire to see this. We have Powerhouse Hobbs in a handicap match, taking on John Cruz and Rob Killjoy. What a name, by the way. Rob Killjoy. John Cruz is the one who still has the best sell ever on the nope spot that Samoa Joe did when he just walked away. He's the guy that got photographed in midair, like looking at Joe going, so good. So Hobbs immediately mowed through Cruz, turned Killjoy inside out with a lariat. Big splashes in the corner until a snap power slam flattened John Cruz. Huge spine buster on Killjoy. And Cruz got spine busted onto his partner, and Hobbs pinned both of them. And the announcers put over how if Hobbs is in the gauntlet next week and his number is called, well, he's got to be the favorite. Sorry, Jay White. Your status as the favorite only lasted 2 segments. Powerhouse Hobbs now is the favorite, according to the announcers. How fickle they are. Again, I don't understand how some people can just go, hey, count me in. Other people have to wrestle to earn their spot. Powerhouse Hobbs apparently doesn't even know if he's in the gauntlet. I guess he'll just randomly be inserted. He'll find out next week. I was at least happy to see him on the show. He lost to Takeshita. They had a good match at World's End. And I said, you've got to get him visible on TV. They didn't have much for him to do. But the purpose of this was to set that one lineup from Excalibur about him possibly being in the gauntlet. And if he is, this man right here could win. That's the only reason this match took place on the show, was to set Hobbs up as a potential winner in the gauntlet next week. But at least they got him a spot on the show and he got a dominant win. Alex Marvez in the back again. This time he was with the Learning Tree, all but Chris Jericho, the actual tree. They had the branches, but no tree. So he was with Big Bill and Brian Keith. And Marvez is asking where Chris Jericho is. The better question is, who cares? They said Jericho isn't coming to North Carolina before then calling out the hometown heroes, Rated FTR, who just so happened to be standing only a few feet away, getting ready for the main event. Bill said that home is where they find themselves, and the Learning Tree finds themselves in a position to knock the hometown heroes down a branch or two. Brian Keith calls them a rated dumbass until Copeland mocks them and says Bill's face is stupid. This is real dialogue here, by the way. So not only did he change his name to Cope, but he called Big Bill, he said, your face is stupid. And he challenges them to a trios match on Collision this Saturday. It'll be Rated FTR against the Learning Tree. We got an MJF promo. This was, again, taped after his match, immediately after his match at World's End. He was lying on the floor in the back, dried blood on his face. And he starts to congratulate Adam Cole on his win. Corrects himself then and says, oh, that's right, you lost. Well, don't tell that to Excalibur, because he's the dipshit on commentary who said, Adam Cole's the real winner here. Yeah, as opposed to the fucking guy who actually got the pinfall in the match. So he corrected everybody and said, yes, I actually won the match. So it took an army to beat him up after the match, and thankfully, mercifully, the chapter now of Better Than You, Bebe comes to a close. Thank you, God. Oh, you know what? Never has there been a more appropriate time for this. The end of Better Than You, Bebe. My God. It took over a year, but finally, we can move on from this. Now that that has come to a close, but he says, it is now time for retribution. It's time to take back the Triple B, something that was taken from him without him actually losing it. Right now, it's being paraded around in a briefcase, and he questions Jon Moxley by asking, what is a king to a god? No one is on the level of the devil, something Moxley should know very well. MJF say he doesn't care if Moxley burns AEW to the ground. You would think he would care because he's got it tattooed on his leg, but he says he doesn't care. He says in 2025, the devil gets his due, part two. And this is great because finally we're getting back to what we should have gotten 2 months ago, which is MJF wanting to get back the championship that he claims he never lost. At least it gets him back in the mix. Now there's a lot of people who are going after the championship. So before he could even think about getting his hands on Jon Moxley, now maybe we see MJF and Copeland at some point. Maybe we see MJF and Hangman. Maybe we see MJF and Swerve. That's the match I talked about on Saturday. What could we do with MJF here in the early part of the new year? Swerve is working with Ricochet right now. When that's over, I would love to see Swerve and MJF. That's something that we haven't seen. We got one promo backstage from them to set up a match that never happened. So there you go. That's one program. That's one match I'd love to see. It gets MJF back in the mix, though, with these top names as he tries to claw and climb his way back into the championship mix, which is where he should be. He is one of their biggest names. Will Ospreay, he is one of their biggest names. These men are the men that are going to have to help carry this company on their back in 2025. They have to build a solid nucleus of guys like that. Okay, I'm not talking about Copeland and Moxley. I'm not talking about people like that. I'm talking about people like Ospreay, people like Okada, even Kenny. Kenny coming back into things, right? I mean, he in many ways is the heart and soul of this company with Cody being gone. Kenny is that guy. Eventually, you'll get him back into the mix as well. These are the people that you need to build around in 2025. Main event was rated FTR, taking on the Death Riders, Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. Yes, thank you for correcting me. He says, do you mean Cope? Yes. Justin Roberts on commentary on the ring announced Adam Copeland as the rated R superstar Cope. So stupid. Oh, my God. I don't know what to say. So the announcers plugged Claudio being sent by Jon Moxley effectively as a mercenary to the Tokyo Dome this weekend at Wrestle Dynasty to take on Moxley's former protege, Shota Umino. Old shooter. Going to be wrestling Claudio at Wrestle Dynasty. So Yuta and Harwood, they started things off until Cope tagged in. And Yuta bailed out of the ring. Claudio tagged, and then we got a first-time face-off between Claudio and Cope as they trade shoulder blocks. Neither man budges. They trade hip tosses. Claudio gets sent over the top rope, where Cope then follows with a baseball slide. So as the referee is distracted, Marina Shafir posted Cope. Sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? This, by the way, is about as many times as the announcers were saying it. They kept saying it over and over. They were trying to get this name over. Over and over and over. Cope, 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 Cope. So it was all Death Riders during the break, isolating Cope, who finally got a backdrop on Yuta to make the hot tag to Wheeler. Cash Wheeler, that is. We had two Wheelers in this match. We had Cash Wheeler and we had Wheeler Yuta. There's a word for that. When you have something that ends with a word and then the next thing begins with a word. What's that called? Forgot what that's called. It's an anagram? I don't know what that's called. Dax tags back in, but Claudio cut off the spike pile driver attempt by FTR. Later on, Wheeler Yuta went up top, but he got cut off with a massive avalanche back suplex for a two count. They went to another commercial break. My clock, it was 9:58. Now, you knew there was going to be an overrun, but still. Fucking commercial break at 9:58. What the hell is that about? So Cope and Moxley, they finally tagged in at the same time. They slugged out. Cope spun out of a Death Rider and hit the... Oh, sounds so stupid. Copeland spun out of a Death Rider and hit the Impaler DDT. Moxley bailed, though, before the spear. So Copeland headed out after him. They brawled into the crowd. They made their way back to the ring, where Moxley blind tagged Yuta. Copeland got planted with a DDT. Yuta signaled for the spear, but he ran into a pop-up Liger Bomb for a two count. Copeland wanted a spear, but he got his legs pulled out by Moxley and Claudio, and they crotched his jewels into the ring post. They gave him a good yank. His legs, not his jewels, but they yanked his jewels right into the ring post. I hate when that happens. Copacabana. There you go. Lucky Straight says Copacabana. Copacabana. That'll be the next song that Tony Khan. Give it time. Tony Khan will be using Barry Manilow before long. If they get that Shockwave show, I'm going to make a prediction right now. If AEW gets that Shockwave show that we heard about, like on Fox or something, which it doesn't look like that's happening anymore, but if they do, it'll be a Barry Manilow song that he picks as the theme song for that show. I'm calling it right now. So Cash Wheeler made the save. He wanted a dive after that. Claudio caught him, though, with a great charging uppercut to put a stop to that attempt. Claudio and Moxley, they cleared off the announce desk. Moxley then walked over to Tony Schiavone and kissed him. Don't look at me. Kissed him on the forehead before he climbed up on top of the announce desk. Teased the pile driver. Copeland backdropped out of it. All of this chaos and this distraction allowed Switchblade Jay White to sneak into the ring. And he laid out Wheeler Yuta with a Blade Runner, which the announcers completely missed. And only noticed it like at the very end as Jay White was bailing out of the ring. Because all the chaos going on by the announce desk, they obviously were not looking at their monitors. So they didn't even call the Jay White spot. Copeland tackled Moxley through the barricade. And then back inside, Yuta ate a shatter machine and then a spear to give Copeland the win. Rated FTR celebrate as the show goes off the air. I thought it was a fun main event. They had a hot crowd. Again, being in the hometown for the babyfaces had a lot to do with that. That obviously helped. Maybe it got a little too chaotic in there at the end because, like I said, the announcers really didn't pick up on the Jay White thing until it was too late. That was kind of an important spot. But the babyfaces had to win. Somebody had to get one over on the Death Riders for a change. I mean, it was a must. You know, coming out of World's End, another win for Jon Moxley. Who can step up? Who can step up and show that they might actually have a chance to take that championship away from him? Now, Copeland should not be the one to beat Moxley for the title. Obviously, that should go to one of their younger stars, probably one of their homegrown stars. That would make sense. One of the younger originals, perhaps. But it does give Moxley a bigger name to challenge right now, which is something that this angle desperately needs. It needs some star power injected into it. Try to breathe some life into what is otherwise a dead story. That's all you can hope for. So, on the whole, I thought it was a solid follow-up to World's End. They had some faces missing. There was no Ospreay on the show. There was no MJF or Okada live in the building, just pre-tapes with them. And Okada's coming off his Continental Classic win, so he wasn't there either. No Tony Storm. They're saving her for a match with Deonna Purrazzo on Collision. The Ricochet stuff was really good. I mean, the Ricochet stuff was probably my favorite thing on the entire show tonight, was that segment. And I'm glad they got Hobbs on the show. I'm glad they got Jamie Hayter on the show, even though they didn't really do much. Is Hangman going to be in the Gauntlet next week? We don't know. Is MJF going to be in the Gauntlet? Based on the promo he cut tonight, you would think that he would be. But they just didn't make that clear. And if he's going to be in it, I don't know why you wouldn't want to make that clear. So we don't know if either of them are going to be in that match next week. But if they're not going to be next in line to challenge for the AEW World Championship, what we need to find out next week is where do they go? What is next for MJF? What is next for Hangman Page? And I hope it's not just Christopher Daniels. What is next for these guys? That is what they need to establish on the show next week. And also, where does Kenny fit into all this? Because Omega's going to be back. He's back on the show next week, right? He's not going to be in the Gauntlet, I wouldn't think, but he'll be on the show. What is he going to say? Who is he going to address? Is it Okada? Doesn't feel like they want to do that match right now. So who's he going to address? What does he do in the meantime? Those are the key questions for next week's show. Collision this weekend has Copeland, Harwood, and Wheeler taking on the Learning Tree. Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Brian Keith. Daniel Garcia defends the TNT title against Mark Briscoe. Tony Storm takes on Deonna Purrazzo for the first time ever. Wink, wink. Private Party defend the AEW tag team titles against Leo Rush and Action Andretti. And the Rock and Roll Express return to Charlotte. That is what is being promoted for Collision. And then Dynamite next week has the Casino Gauntlet match and the return of Kenny Omega. They are calling the episode in 2 weeks Maximum Carnage. Who comes up with these names? Maximum Carnage in 2 weeks. I better get some Maximum Carnage then. It better live up to the name or I'm going to be disappointed. What did you think? How did you cope with AEW Dynamite tonight? Well, that's not good. 39%. Did not cope very well, actually. 39% thumbs up, 61% thumbs down. The Rock and Roll Express, they must be like 70 now. You know what? They are seven. They're 70-ish. But at least up until a couple of years ago, Ricky Morton was still doing Canadian Destroyers. I don't know if I would still be doing that at this point if I were him. But Ricky, man, he was still showing up. He was showing out. One of the great thrills for me in House of Glory was being able to call a Rock and Roll Express match a few years ago. See? Most people on this earth can't say that they've had the chance to call a Rock and Roll Express match, but I can say that. So I will always have great respect for the Rock and Roll Express. All right, let's take a look at your Super Chats. See where we are on the likes. Let me sneak a peek here. We just hit the 400 like goal. So we'll be doing the one round, it looks like, of Be the Booker tonight. One is better than none. We did four rounds last night. If Be the Booker was a gun, we basically emptied the clip on our New Year's Eve stream. Had a lot of very interesting matchups on that card last night. Hey, Base Beerus was with us last night. Says, Hokey Kopey. Yeah, some people are going to be having some fun with that name, I suspect. We got Barry with the 999. Happy Hanukkah and Happy New Year. First time catching a live Dynamite in years thanks to being on Max. Not sure what to make of Caster and Bowens. Who's the heel and the babyface exactly? Well, they're blurring the lines, and with Eddie Hope, it's because Caster will hopefully not be the one going into the Hurt Syndicate, but rather Bowens will be. Because I think that's the right move to make. So, Caster is the one who's completely full of himself. Bowens hasn't done anything to turn heel or be booed by the fans. So, if one was a heel and one was a face, Bowens is the face, Caster is the heel. But I think it flips. And I think we get Bowens and the Hurt Syndicate. Jerome Eugenio says, Happy New Year to everyone. Happy New Year to you as well. We had a lot of Happy New Year messages last night. Thank you guys again for all the love last night. We had it was a long night, but we had a fun night last night. Chris Ludek is coming in with the 12. Why are they hinting at an Undisputed versus Hurt Syndicate feud if Ricochet joins the Hurt Syndicate? No one will cheer for the Undisputed Kingdom. Happy New Year, Solo. Thanks for the shout-outs for my channel. You're very welcome. Who said Ricochet is going to join the Hurt Syndicate? I'm not saying he won't, but there's no guarantee that he's going to end up joining. They were teasing it. Doesn't mean he's going to actually join. Oh, is there no... Oh, did I turn the music off? I think I did. There we go. It's back. I forgot the music was off. Dev to Dust. Been a channel member for 34 months. Says, where do you rank Vin Scully in terms of greatest sports commentators? Also, tell a funny memory from when you were 27 and 32. I could do a better job of reciting the matches from WrestleMania 27 and 32 than I could telling you what I did when I was 27 and 32. But as far as Vin Scully, obviously he's among the greats. I can't say where I would rank him all time as compared to everybody else. I'm quite partial, honestly, to our current crew that call Mets games. Gary, Keith, and Ron, I think they're the best. Obviously, Vin Scully is one of the best of all time. Tuxedo T-Servo. The Cope name feels like a bit of a shot at AEW critics. And for sure, a Cope Harder shirt will be in the shop sooner than later. Oh, you bet your ass it will. I guess that wouldn't be a surprise, though, if it was sort of a not-so-subtle shot at AEW's credit. I mean, he was the one who cut that promo in the ring that time about how great AEW is, and AEW makes everybody better, and let's all just be happy. AEW is great. Everything is great. I love this place. It wouldn't shock me. Base Beer is WWE just released a white spinner belt for John Cena. Well, that's great, but it still spins. No true championship should spin. But I'm sure on the white, it probably looks pretty badass on the white, I would imagine. I haven't seen it yet. Nash DTV, I usually listen on the download, but wanted to show up live to thank you for all your hard work. You're the best and wish you the best for 2025. Well, Nash, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much for the nice words, and I'm wishing you all the best in 2025 as well. Jeff Lee, Cope merches are flying off the shelf as we speak. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yes, because somebody bumped into the shelf and knocked everything off. That's why. Power Blinds. Starting us off strong to hit that goal. Thanks for all you do, Solo. You are my podcast chief. Acknowledge me. Base Beerus, Mo Money, Mo Problem should be Dynamite's theme. Peter Cordieri, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Peter, to you as well. Thank you for the support. Ed Swoggle, streamed clear on Max. No picture-in-picture during the breaks, though. Yeah, I just think there were people who thought that if they paid for a certain tier of Max that they wouldn't get any ads. And during picture-in-picture, they would just keep with the action. And it doesn't work that way. You're still getting your ad breaks. Fox Star Killer with 17 months of channel membership. Hello, all. Just came over from Good Mike Works watch-along for this show. Also featured finished WrestleMania 2000. Now I have to wait for more Raws to get on Netflix before I can resume the Monday Night War. Well, unfortunately, you're going to be waiting a while because they're not getting all the episodes up at the same time. They're going to take their sweet-ass time doing it. The Juliet, here's to two more rounds of Be the Booker. Also, thoughts to everybody down in New Orleans after the attack on New Year's. Also, rest in peace, sweet Daddy C. Yes, he passed away at the age of 91. Bret Hart always spoke very fondly of Sweet Daddy Seeky when he was up in the Calgary territory for Stampede. George, number one Homo sapien fan, Sekman. I saw Omos, by the way. Now, this is amazing. So, if you don't know this, Omos wrestled this morning for Pro Wrestling Noah. So he's been walking around, like, there's pictures of him, like, walking around the streets in Tokyo. People look at, like, Godzilla walking around. Everyone's, like, looking at him like he's a monster. He pinned Naomichi Marufuji. So not only did he and Jack Morris win the GHC tag team titles this morning, Omos pinned Marufuji to win the titles. He is now one half of the GHC tag team champions. Omos is a champion in Japan. I'll tell you what, he gets his run over there. He's going to win over some more Homo sapiens. He's going to convert some more people. He's going to be the big gaijin monster over there. George says, Mercedes Moné needs to quit going after titles in other companies that she never defends and just concentrate on her TBS title. Well, you will take the belt collector and you will like it, George. She's going to collect them all. Like Pokemon. She's going to win them all. She's going to put them on her shelf. She's going to look like Ultimo Dragon coming out on Dynamite. She's going to put her arms out. There's going to be belts hanging off both arms. She's going to recreate the Ultimo Dragon pick. Ali says, Happy New Year, my friend. God bless you. God bless you as well. Thank you. Happy New Year, Ali. BCOM see clearly, I was able to watch OSU on ESPN and AEW on Max. So the Max deal helps. By the way, Texas Longhorns fans, watch for the shoe. Go Bucks. Happy New Year, brother. Jeremy Rose with the 12. Tony is going all in to replicate WCW 2000 and giving Jeff Jarrett the title. I already lived this nightmare. Please don't make me relive it. All he wants to do is relive his childhood with this company. Jeff Jarrett was a champion in WCW 25 years ago. Like, it's one thing, I'm not saying Jarrett's not a star, but it's one thing if you're talking about, like, Sting coming back and getting one last run, especially because he got hurt, you know what I mean? Who is asking for a Jeff Jarrett title chase in 2025? Karen. That's about it. Nobody else is asking for this. Some people might not mind it, but nobody is actively asking for this. Dan Richard says, Ospreay is up 2-1 over Fletcher already in AEW. Oh, that's right. They had that Dynamite match. Are they even acknowledging it? Or are they basically sort of pretending like that didn't happen? I forgot about that match. Well, we'll pretend that this is the rubber match. Base Beer says, if Edge and Jericho finally reform their tag team, what would be a better name? Learn to Cope or the Coping Tree? Oh my God. Probably the Coping Tree. I don't want to see this, though. Although they are going to be in the ring on Saturday. They're going to be wrestling on Collision. What is going on here? We're getting Chris Jericho against Edge on Saturday. We have Jeff Jarrett going after the World Championship. What is happening in this company? Oz CEO fan Inglorious. I never understood all the Sasha stands until I saw our CEO in person. She can have all the nothing segments she wants. Also, Bliss fan, Mercedes is better than Alexa. I'm not getting involved. Oz with another 5. A Fox Star killer. Coming in with 20. Thank you, brother. Oz says, 100 out of 100... I would rather see a 57-year-old legend like Jeff Jarrett on my TV over Wheeler effing Yuta or Garcia in every damn main event and winning belts. Well, I don't want to see Wheeler Yuta interfering in main events either, so we agree on that. Base Beerus says slap nuts. Very good. Project Libertad, Omos, a WWE catering Orbiter showed up in Noah and made more of an impact and got Japanese fans interested than Moxley, Kingston, and Ricochet in New Japan. Yeah, but that's not surprising, though, because You know, again, the guy is an attraction. So I don't know why anybody wouldn't have thought that he wasn't going to get over as an attraction over there. I mean, look at John Moxley and look at Omos, right? Imagine Omos walking out there in Japan for the first time as opposed to Moxley. All eyes are going to be on him and he's going to get a reaction, you know? I mean, the move that he used to beat Mara Fuji was a tree slam, and he didn't put him down gently. Like, he fucking slammed the shit out of this guy. People are looking at Omos, and they're saying, oh my God, look at this guy. This guy's a, he's a destroyer. He's a monster. In WWE, he's already been beaten. Brock Lesnar beat him at WrestleMania, right? I mean, that was the problem with Big Show for so many years. In a different era, Big Show could have been our Andre. But the difference is that Andre was, now maybe not in the later years of his life, but for so many years, Andre, he was the traveling attraction, but you didn't have all this television exposure and, you know, he was a special attraction. Big Show was on television every week doing comedy. So after a while, yeah, he's big and he's strong, but he just becomes another guy. In Japan, Omos is not just another guy. You don't see too many people over there looking like him. So that doesn't surprise me. Base Beerus, AEW, a new Cope. BCOM, see clearly, it's called the Big Rig Solo. Get it right. They started calling it the Shatter Machine again, so I don't know what you're talking about. It's been the Shatter Machine for a while now. Joseph Stewart with the $4.99. Is it true the reason why David Arquette won the WCW title was to promote the movie Ready to Rumble? No. I mean, I can't say that wasn't some small part of it, but no. Believe it or not, it was. You wonder whose idea that was? If Russo is to be believed, anyway. It was not Russo's idea. We have Tony Schiavone to thank for that. Because as the story goes, they were sitting around in the production meeting, and it was Schiavone who said, look, I have an idea. Why don't we put the world title on David Arquette? Right? It'll get people's attention. Of course, Russo loved it. And that's how the whole idea came about, and they ran with it. It was to try to get exposure. It was to try to get media attention. A lot of good, by the way, it did for WCW. Yeah, oh, it got them attention, all right. It got them the kind of attention that they weren't necessarily looking for. But yeah, you want to know who to blame for that, you can blame Tony Schiavone. Oz and Gloria says, boom, boom, Copacabana, boom, boom. Copacabana. I know what I'm listening to when I'm done here. BCOM, see clearly, I think people are dislike bombing the episode wasn't the best ever, but it definitely was an entertaining thumbs up show. Well, it was entertaining for you, and for other people it wasn't. It's the way it goes. People have different opinions. Oz says, please run a poll that is not in a Fed cesspool. Oh, there's the Fed again, huh? The Fed? The Fed? Nope. Cope. I'm going to start using that word more often. Cope. Joseph Stewart, do you think Stone Cold should have at least hosted an episode of Saturday Night Live in 98 or 99 during his peak? Well, I mean, look, they had Rock. What was it, Rock and Triple H? No, Rock hosted, but they had Triple H and Big Show and Foley there, right? But Rock hosted in 2000, right before WrestleMania. Yeah, probably. I would say in 99 at least. They had Austin on the cover of TV Guide. I mean, he was a known commodity at that time. And I think he could have pulled it off, too. You know what, though? I do wonder if maybe he was asked and maybe they said no. You know, maybe they felt like it wouldn't have fit the gimmick. If they had him doing goofy skit. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised if they didn't ask him. William L., I present the horns of a dilemma. Would you buy a Winged Eagle belt that had spinning birds? No, I wouldn't. I would not. I've reached my limit anyway. I have two of them already, so I don't need any more. And the white one I have is, it's perfect. It's just perfect. I'm good. I don't need another one. DEH Sires, Jamie feels like she is on her last months in AEW. Yes, because that she just feels cold as ice. That's why it feels that way. Project Libertad, AEW fans that defend the AEW New Japan partnership but mock the WWE partnerships with any Japanese promotions for being one-sided went real quiet with Omos. Yeah, I haven't seen too much said about that. Oz says, I'm actively asking Double J to take the TNT title. Garbage. Absolute garbage. Fox Star Killer with the 20, and I intend to continue on from the Monday Night Wars into the Invasion era and into the 2002-2005 era ending at WrestleMania 21. Again, as Raws from those times become available on Netflix. Well, that's cool. The more people who watch the archives, that's the problem. Not enough people watch the old stuff. So they don't care. They take their time uploading it. Some stuff just doesn't get uploaded. I mean, Peacock stopped uploading classic, like real classic content, I think 2 years ago. Like they just don't update it anymore. Because the audience is minuscule. So it's not a priority for them. I wish more people would watch it. And then maybe it would be more of a priority and we would get more stuff. That's why I love the WWE Vault channel so much. Because what we don't get from there, we can get on this channel. George Seckman, Mara Fuji just teased that he got an email from Shawn Michaels and might be visiting him soon. Interesting. How about that? Mara Fuji in NXT making an appearance. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? Joseph Stewart, did you think The Rock would have become one of the biggest movie stars in Hollywood today back in 1998? No. Gold Matthew. Solo, I want to learn more about booking philosophies. Any content that you can recommend? If not, can you describe what a couple of bookers were known for? I mean, you can look up books on, promoters like Sam Mushnick and Roy Shire. And you see, those are some of the like old school names you see talked about a lot who were very influential. You know, for example, Pat Patterson. Out in California, he came through that territory, and you know he's known for coming up with the Royal Rumble, but he got that idea from that territory, and then was able to, you know, pitch it to Vince McMahon, and then they ran with it, and it turned into what it's turned into. But there's lots of different territories, different promoters had different booking philosophies, whether it was a Jerry Jarrett or an Eddie Graham or. You know, the Sheik up in Detroit. So if you look up, there are books that have been written about the territories. I think that would give you probably a sense of each individual promoter. I can't recommend any specific book for you off the top of my head. But that's what I would search for. Jeremy Rose, Gunther Omos, WrestleMania, what do you say? I say no. That's what I say. William Sanchez, did you see the picture of Keith Lee on Twitter? He lost a ton of weight and looks great. I hope he'll be back soon and is used regularly. I did not see that photo. I will definitely have to take a look at that. And I hope that he comes back healthy and he can kick ass because it's really, really sad. You know, what happened to his run just because of, you know, health issues. And I would like to see him get a second chance and get his career back on track because I think he could definitely contribute. You know, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. But the most important thing is that he is able to be healthy. Nothing else really matters. But if he's able to get himself healthy, if he is healthy, I hope he comes back and I hope he kicks ass. I wish him all the best. And be calm, see clearly. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Vince called the Rumble stupid. He did. He wasn't sold on the idea when he first heard it. Don Owen is another one in Portland. That's where Piper cut his teeth. Working for Don Owen up in the Pacific Northwest. Be calm, see clearly. No, Gunther should be wrestling somebody like Drew and or Punk or even Cody or even Kevin Owens. It would be cool to see also, just not Omos. Base Beer says, books on booking. That's right. Got to read the book on booking. And we're going to be the booker. See, we're talking about the Portland territory and the Memphis territory, Florida and Texas and all these places. You know what this is? This is the Solomonster territory. And here in this territory, we be the booker. And that's what we're going to do here in a moment. Hydrograd with the 22. Hey, Hydrograd, thank you for that drop. Since Cena's retirement tour is this year, do you think that we will finally see that Broken Skull episode that WWE promoted but never released? Also, what the hell happened to the Broken Skull sessions? I missed that show. Yeah, they just sort of ended. I believe there was an episode that they filmed with Cena, now that you mention it. You know what? I could see that popping up on the Vault channel on YouTube. They actually released the Broken Skull sessions that he did with Bret Hart on there not that long ago. So, and I think one with Goldberg also they put on there. Maybe it'll pop up on there. Unless there's something in there that they just were like, yeah, we can't air this. But I can't imagine what that was, or, you know, that they couldn't edit that one part out and air the rest of the episode. I'm gonna make a prediction and say that it will pop up on the Vault channel at some point this year. And be calm, see clearly. Oh boy.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Bushwhacker Solo is here. Becom says, Solo, I have a question. Who was most responsible for TNA's downfall? I say Dixie Carter because she should have built around AJ Styles, period. Well, Dixie was the one in charge when things really started to go downhill, so it's no different than if it were Vince McMahon in charge or Tony Khan now with AEW. The buck stops with the leader. Dixie was the leader, right? She's the one who, you know, had Russo working for her. You could blame Russo. He definitely deserves his share of blame, but Dixie was the one pulling the purse strings and making the decisions, so blame Dixie. She's the one who made the deal with the devil, right? To bring in Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. Blame Dixie. Face Beer says, Solo's dungeon. That's right. You hear the shrieks of horror from the dungeon. You hear all the screams. Jeremy Rose, okay then, Omos, Tongaloa, WrestleMania main event night one. Sure, sure. That'll allow me to start streaming early that night. As soon as the main event starts, I can start my stream. Saves me some time. All right, well, we didn't hit the secondary goal, but we hit our original goal. And so that means it is time to be the booker. So let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Let's do it, guys. We got one card and one card only tonight. We had four last night. We got to make this good, though, because we only got one tonight. And for tag teams, we begin with the Mega Powers. This right here. This is what I grew up on. Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth in between them. Look at the eyes. You could tell Savage was right, man. The eyes, Hogan's eyes, man. They lust Elizabeth. So do mine, by the way. I can't blame it. But the Mega Powers, man, they were the shit back in the day. Mega Powers are going to be... Oh, wait, we have a stipulation. Choose two single stars to form a makeshift team. Well, that's kind of what Hogan and Savage were, right? They were two single stars that made a makeshift team. So basically, that's two makeshift teams. Okay, well, we're going to be forming our own tag team. This is going to be very interesting. This is going to be very interesting now. Whatever two names we land on, they are going to be a tag team, and they are going to face Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. We begin with Jeff Hardy. Okay, so it's going to be Jeff Hardy. Oh my God, if we land on Matt, I'm going to shit a brick. Jeff Hardy is going to be teaming up with Mr. Perfect to take on Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage. Mr. Perfect and Jeff Hardy. Now, we all know who's going over in this match. I mean, there's no doubt or debate about that, but I mean, how could I not give that the bell? That's right. Ding, ding, ding. Extreme perfection. I like the way you think. All right, women's Be the Booker. We begin with Natalia. She's been around for a long time, hasn't she, in this company? Just signed a new deal this past year. Natty is going to go one-on-one with Ronda Rousey. Now, I'm not in the mood tonight for Ronda Rousey. Not after we had the perfect match last night, Io Sky against Io Sky. We go from that to this. I don't think so. Bliss fan, I knew you weren't going to be happy about that. Bliss fan says, ew. Ew. The vignettes of Perfect and Jeff would be funny. Trying to teach Jeff the pencil flip when he is high as fuck. Back then, yeah. All right, here we go. Main event, Devil's Choice. Keep or replace the man that you just picked. Well, I didn't pick any man, so we're just going to pick again. We are just going to pick again. The Ring General. There he is. The world heavyweight champion himself, Gunther. Where he belongs in the main event of Be the Booker. I love it. Gunther defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Minoru Suzuki. What a fucking match. It probably would just be one giant chop fest, but I for one, would love to see that match. Now we're talking. There you go. Gunther and Minoru Suzuki. Murder Grandpa himself. A chop-a-thon. Have you seen Suzuki when he was in his younger years? He could do a lot more than just chop. Well, we ended on a positive note, though. I'll say that. I like that match. Who takes the championship? Well, Gunther. We did get Gunther and Ishii once. Those chops were brutal. Young Suzuki was a menace. He was, man. He really was. The scary dude. Suzuki, he's an interesting one because you'll watch him and like he'll get into these chop fests and the match kind of slows down. But then there'll be like the sequence where, you know, he comes off the ropes and he stops himself and slides around and like with such speed, it's like, holy shit, where'd that come from? You know, like he still has that in him. just saves it for the right moments. And you forget how explosive he could still be, even though he's in his mid-50s. Right, Suzuki was a former champion in Pancrase. No, he could put a hurting on you. Who is he trained by? There's actually footage on YouTube of him being trained. If you could, I kind of identify him in the video. Was it Billy Robinson? It might be Billy Robinson is training like three or four guys outside of his house. If it is Billy Robinson, he's in his underwear outside of his house, like in his backyard, training some guys. And Suzuki, a young Suzuki, is there. So, like, he was trained by one of the great shooters in wrestling. This is back in, like, 88, 89, sometime around then. Almost positive it was Billy Robinson. Oh, maybe it was Gotch. Is it Gotch? Is it Carl Gotch? It probably is Gotch. That's where the Gotch style pile driver comes from when he uses it. It was Gotch. Was it Billy? Okay, somebody says Billy Robinson, somebody says Carl Gotch. Whoever it was an old guy in his underwear training a bunch of guys, and Suzuki was one of them. So Suzuki knew all the tricks. He learned from a very young age from the great shooters in history. I mean, Hogan didn't teach him? No, Hogan did not teach him. Anyway, thank you guys for joining me for the very first live stream here, first full stream of the brand new year that we now find ourselves in, 2025. It's going to be the best one yet. I have to keep telling myself that, because if I will it to be true, I think it will become. I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm very tired after last night. I went to bed very late. I literally went to bed at 4:30 in the morning. So I'm running on fumes here. You know, if I had one of those energy bars like you have on your phone, mine would be at about 5% right now. So on that note, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to power down. But I will be back with you on Friday night, and it is the first three-hour SmackDown. So live on the channel, probably around 11:20, 11:30 on Friday night. We'll talk about the first SmackDown of 2025. Go check out the New Year's stream last night. We had a lot of fun. Have a good night, guys. I'll see you back here on Friday night. Take care.